Hi there, this is the Romance Program. I'm volunteer Jeannie Oost for Sun Sounds. I've got one story coming up this hour from True Love Magazine called Live Applesauce Wrestling. So we'll find out what that is, and here is the story. Just when everything was as good as it could possibly get, short of me winning the lottery, that's when it all went bad. I was on top of the world. For a while, I had a good job as a sales rep for a cellular telephone company. I owned a nice, cozy bungalow in a safe neighborhood. I had a blossoming relationship with a kind, caring man who treated me like a goddess. And best of all, I had a beautiful, brilliant 16-year-old daughter, Chastity, who was the light of my life. I also had secrets, dark, ugly secrets that I never planned to share with anyone, ever. After all, didn't everyone have skeletons in their closets? Yes, I told myself firmly, they did, and mine would stay locked away in the past forever. No one would ever know about what I'd had to do to make a decent life for Chastity. Back then, Chastity was the shining star in the evil black hole that threatened to swallow me whole. I cringe when I recall how hopeless I felt before I managed to pull myself up by my bootstraps. I swore that I'd raise my daughter in a better atmosphere than my parents had provided for me. Both raging alcoholics, they frequently guzzled our food money. I remember combing the streets as a kid in my hometown for pop bottles in order to scrounge up enough change for a can of soup or a box of mac and cheese. I rarely had clothes that fit, and certainly never any apparel that I liked. When your clothes come from a secondhand store, you have to take what you get, and that includes shoes. I had to take care not to cross my legs at school for fear the other kids would see the holes in the bottoms of my recycled shoes. I never asked to bring friends home from school either. It was just too embarrassing. Outside, more paint had peeled all of our rental house than was left on it. Inside, it was a filthy pigsty. I ran away from home at 16, never to return. It was while hitching a ride to the nearest big city that I learned the power of a woman's body. The middle-aged businessman who picked me up along the way all but drooled over me, offering me cold hard cash in exchange for sex. I refused, but the lesson wasn't lost on me. If a woman needed something, anything, she could always use her body to get it. The sex-mad old man dropped me off on my aunt's doorstep at midnight in the pouring rain. My meager belongings stuffed into a shabby duffel bag beside me. My aunt took me in and tried to keep me on the straight and narrow, but I was a rebel out to prove that I was an adult capable of running my own life. Going back to school wasn't ever an option for me. I hated academics. I was ready to live. So I lied about my age and got a job at the Stop and Rob on the corner. Soon, I was smoking marijuana and swilling whiskey with Ray, a darkly handsome bad boy who regularly dropped by the convenience store to buy his beer. Next thing I knew, Ray had talked me into moving in with him. It was fun at first, like playing house, even though we lived in a trailer park in a bad part of town where the police were regular visitors. Ray was a dreamer. I liked listening to him weave tales about how he was going to make $1 million someday, and we were going to live in a mansion with servants waiting on us hand and foot. I'm gonna hand you the moon and the stars on a silver platter, baby, he promised me. Unfortunately, it didn't take long for me to figure out that there wasn't going to be any moon or any stars, even on a tarnished platter. Ray wasn't ever going to make our lavish new lifestyle happen when he couldn't even get a job. Reality set in, and our future looked cold and bleak. Ray was lazy and had no initiative whatsoever. He sat around smoking pot all day long and doing God knows what other drugs with his raunchy buddies while I worked my tail off at two different jobs, because by this time I was also cleaning houses for extra money. Ray's frustration and unhappiness soon began to suffocate him. That's when the abuse began. He started out by slapping me, then graduated to knocking me around from time to time. At first, I chalked his abusive behavior up to his drinking and tried to steer clear of him when he was impaired. But the abuse escalated. I was starting to wear bruises on a regular basis, and I could tell that my customers at the convenience store were noticing. Creative use of makeup helped with the welts on my face, though, and I took to wearing long sleeves all the time to cover up the hideous purple and black marks on my arms. News that I was pregnant failed to bring Ray out of his funk. This destroyed me because I was thrilled to death at the thought of being a mommy. I was going to have a little person who loved me more than anyone else on earth. He or she was going to depend on me for everything. I pledged to myself then and there to do my best by my baby. But my pregnancy seemed to infuriate Ray. I just want to be it to be you and me, babe, he insisted. I don't want no baby ruining what we got going. It won't, I promised him. The baby will fulfill us. Improve our relationship. No, it won't. So take care of it. You know what I mean. But I steadfastly refused. No way was I going to abort my precious baby. Then, when I was about 5 months pregnant, I came home from work one night to find Ray with an odd smirk on his face and a dirty-looking, long-haired friend of his planted next to him on our garage sale couch in front of the TV. Ray followed me into our bedroom. He hugged me to him, then began running his palms up and down my arms. I was suspicious right away because Ray never touched me anymore. He saved that for his girlfriends, the ones whose cheap perfume I always smelled on him when I worked nights. I've thought of a way for you to make us some extra money, Adriana. I gently shrugged my arms out of his grasp and tried to sound genuinely interested, although I wasn't because my feet ached and my back hurt and I was as tired as Rip Van Winkle before his 100-year sleep. You know Bobby Jankowski, right? You like Bobby pretty well, don't ya? I didn't know Bobby from Adam, but I assumed Ray was referring to the scruffy, disgusting character sitting in our living room. Bobby, yeah, sure. Bobby likes you. He likes you a lot. Bobby says he'll pay us $50 for a little time alone with you. The meaning of his words crept through the fog clouding my exhausted brain. Surely Ray wasn't actually suggesting that I sleep with Bobby for money. What are you saying? I asked sharply. Well, I mean, you're already pregnant. It's not like he could knock you up or anything. And we're broke, man, and I got obligations. I need some fast cash. I was stunned. You can't be serious, Ray. You actually want me to sleep with one of your friends for money? It's just sex, baby. It wouldn't mean nothing. He responded with an aimless shrug. I somehow summoned the strength to yell, "No, I won't do it." Suddenly, I was flat on my back and blood was gushing from my upper lip. Ray was on top of me, pummeling me in the stomach. You gave it to me easy enough, he raged brutally, and you're going to give it to Bobby, and you're going to give it to anyone else I say. You got that? Suddenly, my only thought was of saving my baby. Ray was going to cause me to miscarry, punching me that way. I had to save my baby. Okay, I'll do it, I sobbed as I swiped at the blood running down my chin. A smile creased Ray's face. He cradled me in his arms then and rocked me back and forth, wiping the blood from my face with the tail of his shirt. I lay limp as a Raggedy Ann doll in his arms. His touch repulsed me, and so did the booze on his breath, but I had to make sure that he didn't see that, otherwise the beating would only continue, and I had one more than just myself to look after now. I had a baby to protect. After a few minutes, Ray shifted me off his lap, stood, and then pulled me to my feet. You go clean yourself up a little and I'll get Bobby, he said. As soon as he'd left the room, I rushed to the closet as fast as my wobbly legs would allow and dragged out the shoebox for the expensive sneakers that Ray had charmed me into buying him. I pulled his loaded .45 out of the Crown Royal bag he'd hidden inside the shoebox, dashed to the phone, and dialed 911. My boyfriend just beat me up because I refused to have sex with one of his friends. I have a gun, and if somebody doesn't get here fast, I'm going to kill them both, I told the dispatcher, who answered. Ray and his drug addict friend, whom I now knew to be Bobby, appeared in the doorway just as I said those words. Bobby took one look at the weapon in my hand and made a beeline for the front door. Ray wasn't scared, though. He was just mad. Rage sparked from his eyes as he padded slowly toward me across the room. Give me the gun, Adriana, he commanded. Don't come any closer, I shrieked, hysterical by this point. I'll shoot. Don't shoot anybody, the dispatcher shouted over the phone, which I still held to my ear, cushioned by my shoulder. The police are on their way. But Ray didn't stop. He continued to walk toward me. Albeit very slowly, I dropped the receiver. The dispatcher's squawking became very distant. My gun hand shook with rage and fear. I'm warning you, Ray, don't take another step. I swear to God, I'll shoot you. Ray just laughed his maniacal, drug-induced laugh and took another step, wrapping both hands securely around the butt of the gun the way Ray had shown me. I aimed just ahead of his forward foot and pulled the trigger. The floor in front of him exploded. Ray slammed himself back against the wall, howling with rage. You're going to pay for that, you crazy bitch. No one shoots at Ray Vega. Suddenly, police lights strobed outside and sirens shattered the silence. Dropping the gun onto the bedside table, I waited to learn what my fate would be. Had I truly shot at Ray? The whole thing seemed like a dream, not like something I would ever actually do, but then again, I'd never been in a position where my baby had been threatened before, and now I knew that I'd do anything to protect my baby. An officer rushed into the bedroom and seized the gun. Ray, who was a panic-stricken mess, started shouting about how I'd tried to kill him. My hostility overflowed its bounds then. You can't control me anymore, I screamed at Ray. Find someone else to support your drug habit, you lazy, worthless jerk. I hate you, and you're never going to see me again, and you're never, ever going to get your hands on this baby that you tried to kill. You can run, but you can't hide, Adriana, Ray shouted. I'll find you wherever you go, and I'll make you sorry for what you've done. I'll get a judge to take that kid away from you after it's born, too. No decent mother would shoot at her baby's father. Hate blurred my brain as soon as the jerk mentioned my dear, sweet baby. Looking about wildly for Ray's gun, I suddenly remembered that a cop had already taken it away. But they couldn't stop me from clawing Ray's eyes out, and so I threw myself at him. But another cop seized me by the shoulders and held me back. "You'll never find me, Ray, never, and you'll never touch my baby," I shrieked. "I'll find you if it's the last thing I do, Adriana. I promise you that," Ray shouted as they cuffed him and stuffed him in the back of a patrol car. "Turn that music down, young lady," I called to Chastity, who was lying on her bed talking on the phone. She rolled her eyes but complied with my demand. It was beyond me how she could hear someone speaking on the other end of the phone with her music turned up that high. "Come and talk to me after you get off the phone, okay?" I called. She nodded and motioned for me to leave her room. I sighed. Teenagers definitely were a handful. Somewhere along the line, a surly, argumentative brat had replaced my charming child. "So what's on your mind for tonight?" I asked her when she finally designed to grace me. Oh, dined. To grace me with her presence. "Tammy wants me to go to that bar on 12th with her, the one that lets underage kids do karaoke till 10 o'clock on Friday nights." "Honey, I told you before, you're not going to any bar." "But Mom," she whined, "no one's allowed to drink until after the underage kids are gone." "I don't care, Chastity. A bar simply isn't a good atmosphere for you. You're not going." "All my friends' moms let them go," she grumbled. I knew better than anyone did what the bar scene was all about. No way was I going to allow my daughter to be tainted by the seedy side of life. "Well, I guess I just love you more than their mothers love them. You're not going, and that's final." "You don't let me do anything," she wailed. "I let you do anything within reason, and you know it, Chastity." Tears pulled in her eyes. "Everyone else has a later curfew than I do. No one's going to want to hang out with me when they get to stay out after midnight, and I have to come home at 11 o'clock like some baby. I'm not going to have any friends, and it's going to be all your fault." With that, she ran to her room and slammed the door shut behind her. I heaved a great loud sigh. We'd been over this so many times lately. Why couldn't Chastity just accept the fact that I knew what was best for her? Why couldn't she follow my rules without arguing with me at every turn? The next day, Chastity was back to her bubbly preteen self. After she dragged herself out of bed at noon, I suggested that we plan a special mother-daughter day together. "Let's go to the mall and I'll buy you that pair of designer jeans you've been wanting, and some shirts and a couple of new swimsuits before they get picked over," I offered agreeably. Chastity flung her arms around my neck and hugged me tight. "You're the greatest mom in the whole wide world," she chirped happily. I smiled to myself. I'd gone from the worst to the greatest mom in the space of a few hours. Of course, I'd known that Chastity would get over her anger. She always did. Our fight had been just another bump on the difficult road called motherhood, I assured myself. I was glad we had so much fun that day because soon after, Chastity's attitude took a turn for the worst, and she didn't snap out of it this time. In fact, she became exceedingly hostile. In fact, she could hardly say a civil word to me. I begged and pleaded with her to tell me what was wrong, but got only cold, silent stares in return. Virtually overnight, my daughter became a stranger to me. Then her grades started going downhill, and I was called in to talk to the school counselor. The prim and proper woman peered at me over her glasses, accusations in her eyes. "Do you have any idea what could be responsible for Chastity's turnaround?" she asked me. "No, I don't. If I was aware of a problem, I'd be doing something about it," I responded testily. No one was going to treat me like I was a bad mother. I had done everything for Chastity, everything. Chastity had a good home, and she'd never lacked for anything. I'd made sure of that. "Well, we're very concerned about her behavior, Mrs. Glass. Her teachers are complaining that she's not paying attention in class, that she's not turning in her homework, and that she's failing her tests. I don't know how to put this delicately, so I'm just going to come out and ask, have you seen any indications that Chastity is on drugs?" I prickled with indignity. How dare this prudish woman ask me such a thing? My daughter is not on drugs, and I'll thank you to keep those allegations to yourself unless you have some concrete proof. The counselor sniffed and pulled herself up ramrod straight in her chair. "Well, if she's not on drugs, then how do you explain the sudden, abrupt lapse in her schoolwork? If I knew, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you about it. I'd be doing something about it." The counselor raised one eyebrow imperiously. "Does Chastity have a father figure in her life? Perhaps her problems are a result of the lack of a nuclear family throughout her childhood." Anger boiled up inside of me. This self-righteous woman was blaming Chastity's problems on me for being a single parent. Grabbing my purse, I stood and loomed over her. She gasped and shrank back into her chair with her hand to her chest. "Chastity's father died before she was born. Not that it's any of your business. You know, maybe this high school's at the root of Chastity's problem. I have no idea how the students can possibly learn in such a negative environment." The counselor stared at me in disbelief as I spun around and walked out the door of her office. Miss Self-Righteous probably had a minivan in the parking lot that she drove her 2.5 kids into, and from the split-level home in the suburbs that she shared with her harried husband. A woman like her couldn't possibly understand the kind of life I'd had. I'd done the best I could. I tried to surround Chastity with positive male role models. I really had. My male friends had played softball and frisbee with her and taught her to play cards. I'd kept any potential boyfriends at arm's length, never allowing a man to spend the night at our house unless Chastity was staying the night with a friend. Since I'd always thought it best that Chastity never know that her biological father didn't want her or care about her, I told her that he was a wonderful man who died in a car accident just prior to her birth. She'd never questioned my story. I cried a river of tears to my boyfriend, Jerry, that night after Chastity left to go to a movie with some friends. Jerry knew how hard I tried to be a good mother. He tried unsuccessfully for several years to take me out when Chastity was younger. I hadn't even accepted a date with him until Chastity had hit 14, begun flaunting her newfound independence, and started severing the apron strings. Even then, my main goal had been to find out exactly what type of person Jerry was before I allowed him to spend any time around my daughter. A mother couldn't be too careful in the new millennium. "She won't even talk to me anymore," I cried to Jerry that night. "It's like she's put up a brick wall between us and I can't tear it down." He pulled me to him. "Calm down, darling. He whispered into my hair, "You've just got to try a little harder, that's all. You can't lose communication with her." But I feel like I already have. My face crumpled and tears flooded down my cheeks. Just then the door opened and Chastity walked in. Her face was hard and expressionless. "Forgot my jacket," she said by way of explanation as she strode to her room. When she came back into the living room, Jerry said, "Could you spare us a second or two, Chastity?" She inhaled noisily but stopped just inside the living room. "What?" Jerry wasn't one to beat around the bush. He got right to the point. "Chaz, you've got to know that the way you're acting lately is killing your mother." "What do you mean, the way I'm acting?" she snarled. Normally, Jerry didn't interfere in our affairs, but he was a bulldog that night because he knew how hurt I was by Chastity's behavior. "Do you mean to say you don't know that you're hurting your mother by the cruel way you're treating her?" he demanded. She shook her head, looking as though she had no idea what he was talking about. My heart sank even lower into the pit of my stomach. Did she really not know, or was she playing some obnoxious teenage game? I couldn't tell by the look on her face, but Jerry was becoming visibly upset by Chastity's attitude. "Chastity, honey, I've got to tell you that for the first time since I met you, I'm ashamed of you," Jerry said plainly. Chastity's face fell. "Just tell me the truth, Chastity. What have I done? Why are you so mad at me? Please tell me, honey," I pleaded. A dark shadow passed over that pretty young face. Then the sneer returned. "Tell you the truth? I always tell the truth, just like my mother taught me." She whirled around and left then, slamming the front door shut so hard behind her that it almost sprang off its hinges. Jerry and I sat for hours afterward trying to dissect the puzzle. What was wrong with Chastity, and why had the word truth upset her so? Things between Chastity and me got nothing but worse after that. I thought back over my life, trying to figure out where I'd gone wrong. On that horrible night when I'd split the sheet, when I had split the sheets with Ray, he'd been hauled off to jail, and I was sent straight to a shelter for battered women. Although it was apparent to the police that I was being abused, I was charged with felony menacing and reckless endangerment for shooting in Ray's general direction. The latter was a misdemeanor for which I ended up being placed on probation. A judge handed down a deferred sentence for the felony, which meant that the charge would be dropped if I didn't get in trouble with the law again for the next 5 years. He also ordered me to seek counseling for 1 year. After my court date, I left the past behind and moved on to the next phase of my life. Ecstatic doesn't begin to describe my feelings on the day Chastity was born. From that day forward, I had a sole purpose in life: to provide a loving, stable, wonderful environment for my daughter to grow up in. Well, I needed money and lots of it in order to buy my daughter the life I wanted for her. The shelter offered free babysitting for working mothers who were trying to get back on their feet, but since I hadn't finished high school, I didn't have enough education or training to do anything other than wait tables or work in a factory. I opted for the latter, but found standing on my feet for hours on end, performing the same task over and over again, to be pure drudgery. I was desperate to find a job I liked that could also support my daughter and me. One of the women at the shelter encouraged me to start thinking in a different direction. She watched me one day as I admired my svelte new post-childbirth self in a mirror. I'd been working hard to get back to my former weight, and she knew it. She began regaling me with tales of her days as a stripper and remarked that I'd been blessed with the perfect body for the job. The amount of money she claimed she'd brought home on one weekend night alone sent my lower jaw crashing to the floor. I worked for a whole week in a lousy factory to make that kind of money. It was then that the thought occurred to me, why shouldn't I use my body to make money? No one would ever have to know. It was easy getting a job at one of the strip clubs downtown. The worst part was lying about it to the nice people who ran the shelter. They thought that I was still working the graveyard shift at the factory, when in fact I was shaking my booty as an exotic dancer. If the truth be known, I hated exploiting my womanhood for money. I loathed the way the men all tried to touch me, and I despised their crude remarks. I learned to blank out my mind while I was dancing, knowing that every dollar stuffed in my G-string was helping me to pull myself out of the quicksand of poverty. The strip club customers were all fools, throwing away good money just to look at a woman's naked body. It didn't bother me at all to take advantage of every single one of those morons. I worked my pole seriously, wiggled my behind in their faces, and telegraphed lewd messages with my eyes. By the time I got done with them at the end of the night, they were literally panting with desire and opening their wallets with eager, sticky fingers. If they were that stupid, then I figured that they deserved to be perfect, or what is it, parted from their money. Soon I'd saved enough money to put a down payment on a nice condo for Chastity and myself. I beamed with pride the day I took her to the department store in the mall and bought her a carload of expensive clothes with a frilly bow to match every outfit. I'd had to buy her clothes in discount stores prior to that. Well, never again. It was going to be first class all the way from now on for my Chastity. She'd have everything that was in my power to give her, I vowed. She would never, ever have to be embarrassed in school the way I'd been because of my horrid, ill-fitting secondhand clothes. She'd never be looked down upon by others because she came from the wrong side of the tracks. I would see to that. Once Chastity was in school all day, I got my GED and then enrolled at the local junior college and eventually earned my associate's degree in business. The day I landed my job as a cellular phone rep, I delved into my savings and put a large down payment on a cute little house that I'd had my eye on for several months. No one who knew me had a clue about my past. They wouldn't even have believed it if someone had told them. I dressed impeccably and drove a newer model car. I dressed Chastity like a junior model and hammered perfect manners into her. Yes, everything was going along just as smoothly as chocolate silk pie. And then suddenly, bam, overnight, my life changed again. Any and all attempts to reason with Chastity were fruitless. I cried, I ranted, I raved, but nothing did any good. She became even more remote in the weeks following the confrontation between her and Jerry. We were like two strangers living in the same house. What's worse was that I could feel her hatred, her revulsion, her disgust for me, and I had no idea what I'd ever done to earn those feelings from her. One Saturday morning, I decided to spring another mother-daughter adventure on Chastity. I figured she'd warm up to me during a spur-of-the-moment shopping trip. She'd spent the night with her best friend. So I punched out the girl's number and asked for Chastity when the girl's mother answered the phone. Yes, she's here, but I hate to wake them up so early. They came in awfully late from the karaoke place last night. I was stunned. Chastity had broken my rules and gone to the karaoke bar and stayed out past her curfew. Just how late are we talking? I asked. Oh, they got home about 12:30 or so. I hope I didn't get Chastity in trouble. Anger washed over me. I might have been letting Chastity get away with treating me like dirt, but she was not going to violate her rules and get away with it. Please send Chastity home right away, I said stiffly. She has things she needs to do. Chastity's nasty attitude was really apparent when she walked in the door a half an hour later. What do you want? She asked rudely when she found me pacing in the living room. Don't you sass me, young lady, unless perhaps you'd like to be grounded for the next month or so. She shrugged, like she didn't believe I was capable of disciplining her in that way at her age. Don't give me that snotty look, I warned. I'm not, she snapped. And what's this I hear about you going to that karaoke club and staying out until after midnight last night? Chastity flipped her hair defiantly. I'm 16 now. I'm old enough to make my own rules. Learning that Chastity had deliberately flouted my rules deflated me. She was out of control. I realized then that I had to gather all my strength and rein her in before she started really running wild. Chastity, as long as you're living under this roof, you will go by my rules. Is that understood? Her lips pressed into a straight, tight line. Yeah, I get it. Well, now that we've got that straight, how about a mother-daughter day together? We could go hiking up at the lake or go shopping in that little Swedish village. Just you and me. No thanks, she said coldly. I'm kind of tired of all that bonding stuff. Anyway, are we finished here? No, we're not finished, Chastity. You're grounded, I blurted out. A hateful expression crossed her face, and then she bolted for her room. Depressed and drained of hope, I dropped onto the couch. Pain shattered my heart. Tears burned the backs of my eyelids. How was I ever going to get Chastity back? Jerry was a big help to me when I was at my neediest. Adriana, I know you want to trust Chastity right now, but maybe you need to keep closer tabs on her than ever before. I was bewildered, confused. What do you mean? I mean that if you've already caught her breaking one or two rules, chances are she's breaking a whole lot more. Maybe you need to watch every move she makes in order to figure out what's going on in her life. Thoughtful silence pervaded the room. Maybe Jerry was right. As much as I hated to admit it, I didn't trust Chastity anymore. Furthermore, as much as I hated to know the truth, I knew I had to face it. As it was, I began holding down the mute button and listening in on her phone calls from another extension, but it was almost like Chastity suspected I was doing it because she talked in riddles with her friends, and I couldn't find out anything that way. I looked through her car early one morning while she was still asleep, but the only thing I found was one of her new bikinis in a plastic grocery bag. That wasn't particularly unusual. Chastity liked to swim at the YMCA from time to time. Finding the skimpy bikini piqued my interest, though, so I snooped around her room at the next available opportunity, and that's when I found the telltale letter scrawled across the envelope in handwriting that was vaguely reminiscent of Ray's was Ms. A. Glass. Icy fingers shivered down my spine at the sight. With dread, I yanked the letter from its sleeve and read the words scribbled on a wrinkled piece of lined paper. Does anyone know you worked in a strip joint? What would you pay for people not to find out? Don't call the cops or you'll be sorry. Oh, God, Chastity. Chastity had opened a blackmail letter that Ray had intended for me and discovered my deepest, darkest secret in the process. No wonder she was so angry with me. Her image of me had been shattered. The knowledge that Chastity had found out about my sordid past rocked me to my soul. No wonder she'd had such a rotten attitude lately. At first, I'd chalked it up to teenage-itis. Everybody knew that teenagers were obnoxious. However, the deeper she'd gone into her dark place, the more I'd tried to deny how very much like Ray she seemed, how cold and vile and hostile she'd become. Sometimes she looked so much like him that when she sneered at me, I had to quell the urge to slap her. And now Ray himself had come back into our lives. This very idea made me sick to my stomach. How had he found us? What did he want? And what would happen if Chastity found out that her father not only wasn't dead, but that he was a slimy doper? I cringed at the thought. Somehow I had to keep her from finding out about Ray. Chastity came home early that Friday night. Unlike the many recent weekend nights when she'd broken her curfew, I was waiting for her on the couch, blackmail letter in hand. I held up the letter as she walked in the door. "Why didn't you show this to me?" I asked softly. Instantly, her face twisted into a mask of rage. "What were you doing? What were you doing in my room?" she screeched. She looked frighteningly like Ray at that moment. "I was searching for an explanation of your attitude. So why didn't you tell me you got paid to take your clothes off for men, Mom?" My eyes brimmed with tears. "It wasn't something I ever wanted you to know about, Chastity. It's not a time in my life that I'm proud of. You're no better than a whore." Her words hit me like a slap in the face. "Don't you ever speak to me that way again," I warned her. "I'll have you know that the money I made from working as an exotic dancer paid for all of your fancy clothes and toys when you were little. It paid for our condo and for a sizable chunk of this nice house you grew up in." Tears tracked down Chastity's face. "I didn't ask for any of those things. I wouldn't have wanted them if I'd known what you had to do to get them." "But I did it for you, Chastity. Don't you see? It was all for you, so you could have a nice life better than the one I'd had." Withdrawing into her shell again, Chastity snapped, "Whatever." I headed straight for the bathroom and washed my face after our confrontation. Then, emotionally sapped, I changed into my pajamas. The house was quiet when I emerged from the bathroom. Chastity's light was out. She'd evidently gone to bed. I heard a car engine turn over as I walked to my bedroom. As a single mother, having always been alert to nighttime noises, I walked to the front window out of habit and pulled the curtain aside. Were those Chastity's taillights I saw shooting down the street? I strained to get a better look, but the car was speeding away too quickly. Racing to Chastity's bedroom, I pushed the door open. There was a motionless lump in her bed, covered by the quilt. "Chastity," I whispered. No answer. She couldn't be in her bed asleep and in her car at the same time, but her car was parked in the driveway, wasn't it? I couldn't remember, so I ran back to the front window and peered out again. Chastity's car was not in the driveway. With rising trepidation, I dashed back to her bedroom and threw the light switch. Chastity's silky hair was absent from the pillow. In fact, her pillows were nowhere in sight. I rushed over to her bed then and threw back the covers. The lump in Chastity's bed wasn't Chastity at all. It was her pillows, artfully arranged to pass for a sleeping body beneath a quilt. Which left the all-important question, where had Chastity gone at this time of night? Sick at heart, I called Jerry. I was so glad that I'd held back no details about my background from him once we'd gotten serious. Jerry knew everything about my unpleasant past and loved me in spite of it, so I told him about the blackmail letter and begged him for help. Minutes later, he was on my doorstep. "I'm calling the police," I announced as he walked into my living room. "That's not a good idea, Adriana." "Then let's wait till she comes home and confront her. It's up to you how you want to handle this, but I'd advise you to see for yourself what Chastity's up to and deal with her accordingly. You're not going to get any straight answers with a direct attack. That'll only put her on the defensive right away." I wasn't sure I understood what he was implying. "What do you mean?" "I mean that you need to follow her next time she goes out. See exactly where she's going and what she's doing. Catch her red-handed and blow the whistle on her nocturnal activities. You can call me from your cell phone and I'll meet you any time, any place, so you don't have to deal with her on your own. Heck, depending on what kind of people she's involved with, you may need me for backup. We may even need to call the police then, but let's see what she's up to first." Jerry was right. I needed to see firsthand what Chastity was doing late at night. I just hoped and prayed that she'd be safe tonight, wherever she was. Sleep escaped me for a long time after Chastity crept back into the house at 1 a.m. The only reason I didn't jump out of bed and down her throat was because I didn't trust her to tell the truth about where she'd been. I let out a harsh, muffled chuckle at the thought. The truth. I'd started this whole ugly mess by not telling the truth. As it was, my whole life was one big lie, and now my past had finally caught up with me. The following night, I felt anxious and uptight. Chastity went out early and came home early, just as she had the night before. She left again after she thought I was in bed, not knowing that I was hiding in my car, waiting to follow her. I dialed Jerry on my cell phone and alerted him that I was on the move when she left the house and got into her car. Tracking Chastity from a discreet distance was fairly easy at that time of night because there wasn't much traffic. She was driving fast and obviously knew exactly where she was going. When she pulled into a parking lot outside of a sleazy pool hall, I almost had an anxiety attack. What was my baby doing in a place like this? Noting the street signs, I informed Jerry of my location and waited for him impatiently. Hunkering down in my seat, I fidgeted with the old soft ball cap of Chastity's that I'd stuffed my hair into. Wearing the cap was the only way I could think of to hide my face so that I could spot Chastity before she spotted me. I threw myself into Jerry's arms when he finally arrived. "I'm a total wreck," I cried. He pulled me into a big-time bear hug. "Pull yourself together, honey. She's probably got a fake ID and she's in there drinking with some friends. If she is, we'll call the police. Last I knew, they frowned on that kind of thing." Smoke and crowd noises wafted in our direction as we sidled through the door of the pool hall. Several men were shooting pool, but the lion's share of the noise seemed to be coming from a room at the back of the joint. As we walked toward it, the whoops and hollers became louder and more boisterous. A muscular bouncer stopped us at the door and collected a hefty fee from Jerry before allowing us to enter. He looked at me oddly, as though not many women ventured back into the bowels of the joint. The crowd noise had reached a fever pitch by this time. Some of them were yelling, "Off with the bikinis," while others yelled, "Get naked! Get naked!" Standing on my tiptoes, I strained to see what they were all watching, but to no avail. Gripping my hand, Jerry began wending his way through the crowd with me in tow. I got the shock of my life when we shoved our way to the front. A naked Chastity and three other nearly nude young girls were wrestling in a blow-up kiddie pool full of what appeared to be applesauce. They were rolling around on top of each other and laughing hysterically. One girl managed to get to her feet, but was immediately slapped back down into the applesauce with the others. As I froze in speechless horror, a bystander grabbed one of the other girls' bikini tops and ripped it off, eliciting a thunderous cheer from the crowd of testosterone-fueled males. Looking about, I saw the frenzied, excited looks on the faces of the perverts watching the show. It scared me to even think about a crowd like this losing control. It was then that I spied Ray. He looked rough and wrinkled, but there was no doubt in my mind it was him. He was sitting in a chair to the side of the kiddie pool. To my horror, he called to one of the girls, and she proceeded to climb out of the pool and begin performing lap dance on him. My first instinct was to run over there and choke the life out of him, but good sense set in, and I realized that I had to deal with my daughter first. I marched to the edge of the pool. "Chastity Elaine Glass," I roared. "Stop that this instant." A hush settled over the crowd. Chastity simply stood there in the applesauce and stared at me in saucer-eyed shock. Fire shot from my own eyes as I grabbed her by her applesauced hair and dragged her out of the pool. She stumbled once, but I jerked her right back to her feet. Pulling my jacket off, I wrapped it tightly around her. "You are in deep trouble, young lady," I snarled. Chastity's eyes were glazed. She seemed to be in some kind of stupor. Icy fear washed over me as it dawned on me that Chastity really was on drugs. I figured if performing for men was good enough for you, it was good enough for me," she slurred. Fingers of pain coiled around my heart and squeezed. Chastity and I had a lot of talking to do. Ray stood in front of us, demanding my attention. "What the hell do you think you're doing running my show?" he roared. "Your show? You mean to tell me that you're the one who's responsible for this disgusting control?" I couldn't control myself any longer. Blinded by rage, I went for Ray's jugular. Suddenly, strong arms gripped me. And pried my fingers from Ray's throat. Jerking my head back, I saw that Jerry was the person who held me, and the police were right behind him. "Settle down, honey. Let the cops handle this." Pointing an accusing finger at a choking, sputtering Ray, I yelled, "This sleazebag is charging admission to watch underage girls wrestle in applesauce, and I think he gave my daughter drugs." Chastity stood next to us, swaying from side to side. Ray went into total shock. Daughter? Time stood still, and when I realized what I'd done, identified Chastity to Ray as his daughter, my world was about to come crumbling down right before my eyes. All this time, I'd kept all of my skeletons rattling about in a closet, and yet my own daughter had still followed in my footsteps. I'd been living a lie for years, and now I was about to be unmasked. All of my skeletons were about to come out, dancing out into the naked bare light of day, and there was nothing I could do to stop it from happening now. "You heard me, you jerk. Do you see what you've done?" I screamed. Ray nodded toward Chastity. You mean this girl is my daughter?" Chastity took one look at Ray and collapsed. "Chastity and I have been in counseling for months now, both together and separately. I finally faced the shame and humiliation of my past. As it turned out, Ray was co-owner of the pool hall. He and his partner had begun attending the karaoke night for teenagers at the bar where Chastity had hung out in order to recruit young girls to wrestle. After plying them with methamphetamine and ecstasy, Ray and his partner coaxed the girls into wrestling nude in vats of applesauce. Luckily, Chastity had drawn the line at that. Ray was charged with sexual exploitation of children, procurement of children by sexual exploitation, contributing to the delinquency of minors, and possession of methamphetamine. With any luck, he'll be in prison for a very long time. For healing purposes, Chastity had him in prison. Chastity visited him in prison and told him exactly what she thought of him. Chastity became much closer to Jerry after that. She came to understand how much he loved her and cared about her, and she finally saw that he was the one man who'd always been there for her. "Was I wrong to lie to my daughter? I'll never know for sure because fate intervened and brought my sins to light. But I do know one thing. Honesty has become the most respected value in our household." Okay, that's going to do it for this romance program. Thanks always for listening. This has been Volunteer Jeannie Yost for Sun Sounds. Take care. Have a great week. Bye-bye.